Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show. The core concept behind Jailbreak Leadership is to unlock your best you as an individual or organization by knowing and rallying behind your two-word purpose. I'm always excited when I discover an organization that knows their purpose and is making it happen. And today on Conscious Curiosity, we have such a company and leader. Javier Guerrero, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Javier is the CEO of Coastal Roots Farm, whose two-word purpose is nourishing community. Love that. They do that by cultivating healthy, connected communities by integrating sustainable agriculture, food justice, and ancient Jewish wisdom. Javier, I'm very excited to break that down today and share all the amazing work that you're doing and why you're doing it. How's that sound?
Let's do it.
Ready to jump in and make that happen? Well, first off, can you give us a little snapshot is how are you nourishing community at Coastal Roots Farms? What does that look like?
Well, we do it a number of ways. I mean, I think one of the amazing aspects of Coastal Roots Farm is that it is multidimensional. We do refer to ourselves as a Jewish community farm, but those are really kind of the guiding principles and values, which I do believe are shared values across all peoples and speak to how we nourish community. So two of the big ones I would say would be the notion of arevu, which means mutual care. And another one is adam v'adama, which is that connection between humankind and the earth. So when we talk about how the farm nourishes community, you know, we're looking at sustainable agriculture. We're certified organic, regenerative agriculture. It's about caring for the soil, caring for the earth, which then feeds our body. We're growing around 80,000 pounds of food, feeding around 45,000 people annually. And so that speaks to our second impact initiative, the first being the regenerative agriculture, the second one being food access. And those are very much interconnected. The third way that we're nourishing community is also connected to the agriculture, which is our environmental education. This past year, we served over 12,000 youth coming to the farm throughout San Diego County through a number of different programs. Our school field trip program reaches, you know, so many school districts and schools and youth groups from South Bay to, you know, Fallbrook to Inland to the coastal. And, you know, that's pre-K through 12th grade. We have all sorts of after-school programs, seasonal summer camps, and all sorts of, you know, family-based programs as well. But, you know, it's very connected to how we farm, about the values around food access, food justice, as well as, you know, again, weaving in those values and those traditions. The fourth way that we nourish community, again, all these things being interconnected, is through uplifting vibrant Jewish life, which is really bringing people through the farm to celebrate around all the many agricultural festivals and gatherings and community ceremonies throughout the year. But it's really bringing in such a diverse background. You know, so many cultures and traditions are connected through food, right? And through the land. And so the farm, I think, does that in really powerful and meaningful ways. And so, you know, our two largest agricultural, Jewish agricultural events, the first is Sukkot Harvest Festival, which is in the fall, which is a traditional time, like so many peoples and cultures around the world, where they would go into the fields and harvest and celebrate that time. The other one is in the kind of winter time, which is Tu B'Shvat, or Food Forest Festival. And that's, you know, a birthday celebration of the trees. It's also one of the four New Years within Judaism, but it's really just a beautiful, beautiful time on the farm. Both of those events were around 1,000 people and probably one of the larger events of that kind in the United States. Oh, so wow. When you take all that together,
you're busy.
How we're nourishing community, it's pretty special and it's fairly unique. I would say in the region and probably as you look across the United States.
Wow. You've got to be very busy. That's amazing.
Yeah.
So when you talk about the food access, maybe give us a little insight. What's food access look like here in San Diego? How many people are struggling to get healthy, good food?
Yeah. Well, I mean, 1 in 4 San Diegans, you know, is struggling with food access.
1 in 4.
1 in 4.
That's mind boggling.
It's mind boggling. And, you know, we've seen, and I think everybody's seen food access really be challenged during and since COVID. You know, coming out of COVID, people have continued to struggle. And, you know, right now, of course, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty with the economy, food prices, and so on. So, you know, we get food out to the community in 2 main ways. And that's one through our Pay What You Can farm stand, which is open Thursday and Sunday, Thursday 12 to 3 and Sunday 10 to 3 p.m.
Is that at the farm itself?
It's at the farm. They're in Encinitas, 441 Saxony Road, Encinitas, open to the public. And people can discount however much produce, you know, everything's priced out. So, you know, you go to check out. And then at that point, based on the idea of access with dignity, so you're not showing a pay stub or anything like that. And people can choose how much they want to discount up to $30. If you have a SNAP or EBT, which again is a very kind of political topic right now, if that's going to extend or where that's going to go, but that allows people to extend those dollars even farther. And we also have an extended discount for seniors and for active duty military and veterans. And again, that's Thursday, Sunday. Everything else that we're donating, or I should say everything else that we're putting out into the community, is 100% donated, and that's going offsite. So farm stands at the farm, all the other distributions, donations are happening in partnership with other nonprofit and community organizations. And those are going from throughout much of San Diego County, a lot of North San Diego County, very targeted communities that are serving active duty, low enlisted, active duty military and veteran families, partnering with different health and human services organizations like Vista Community Clinic. We're also going out to tribal communities like Ipai Nation of San Isabel and supporting some of the local tribal communities around there. American Indian Health Center, Cantabria Housing, Mercy Housing for low-income seniors. We're supporting the Community Resource Center there in Encinitas, and it goes on. So those are all really focused distributions and partnerships. And to make all this possible on the food side, and I know we're later on talking about the education, but, you know, there's the part that we earn, which is a smaller portion, but it's very much individual donations, corporate donations and grants, private foundation grants, and a little bit of government support. But our government support is more through the County of San Diego.
Stay away from those federal dollars.
Yeah, apparently. Yeah. So we're very grateful to the County of San Diego and supervisors for supporting our work in the community.
Well, you're doing amazing work in the community. So you were hopeful either they would be supportive of what you're doing here. Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Very scary though. The whole idea of that 1 in 4 individuals out here actually have food issues, right? I mean, that's just, and even like the military too, like.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, it's challenging and, you know, when we talk about food access, you know, the notion of it takes a village, well, it takes a whole community. And there's so many nonprofits and organizations and service programs and places where people can get food. And a lot of times it's not knowing where to get food. People aren't familiar with 211. They provide a lot of important services. You know, we're one of the listed organizations where people can go. Obviously, large food, there's the food banks, or, you know, for Feeding San Diego, San Diego Food Bank. You know, a lot of those are like different models, right? They're like redistributing food. You know, we're kind of growing from seed to beneficiary. So we're like literally growing the food that we distribute from seed and at the most nourishing produce you can imagine. But again, it's just one little, you know, it's one piece of a much bigger puzzle. And so, you know, it takes large organizations like Feeding San Diego and San Diego Food Bank that are really getting food to, like, you know, millions of pounds of food out to people. We're talking about 80,000 pounds of fresh, organic, regeneratively grown produce. But again, it's just a different model. But we all have a role to play. There's other places that they both work with amongst other organizations that are really kind of the distribution points. So whether it's like Jewish Family Service, they have a market there, the Community Resource Center that I mentioned there in Encinitas, which is doing amazing work, and just a multitude of organizations. And so together, you know, everybody's doing their part to really address, you know, food access and food insecurity in our community. You know, there's the backpack programs, which are really amazing that they offer as well. Some of the large organizations that, you know, kids are going, they might be getting food at school during the week, but then they're going home on the weekend and they might not have food readily available. So, right. I mean, it's really scary. And it's like, how can you do well in school? How can you focus on work? How can you address the things that you need to do in life if your fundamentals of food, clothing, shelter are not being met?
Not being covered. Yeah. Wow. So talk a little bit about the education program. So you got lots of kids coming through. Do they come in on a kind of a one day sort of deal, or do some of these kids get to kind of spend time and actually see things kind of through the whole cycle, or what does that look like?
Yeah. So we have, you know, our field trip program, which again, so many kids coming from all parts of the county, all types of schools, regardless of whether they're Title I or their designation, you know, private schools, charter schools, homeschool groups, any school or group, could be a youth group program coming to the farm for programs. And we provide, again, through private philanthropy and support. And then there's also the portion that people are able to pay. Those kind of work together to make this available. So, you know, I would say a little over 50% of the groups coming to the farm are receiving some kind of support, either program and or transportation costs, and transportation costs often being one of the most expensive. But yeah, they're coming for a one day experience. Although we have a lot of schools and partnerships where the same school is coming year over year. We're in our 10-year anniversary right now. So we started off as a nonprofit in 2015. So in 10 years, we're having schools come over year. We do have some strategic partnerships like Escondido Union School District, where all 1,500 fourth graders are coming each year. We have partnerships with Carlsbad and San Marcos and then other specific schools. But what's really nice is that, you know, those kids are coming back at different grades and different age levels. We're also letting them know when they come out for field trips, we're letting them know about our farm stand or pay what you can farm stand and where they can also access food. So again, it's multifaceted, multidimensional how we nourish community. We have an after school in the farm program, which actually developed during COVID. We were in the critical sectors of food access and childcare. We created that during COVID. We call it balancing screen time with green time, getting kids outdoors, right? And parents were going crazy and like, we want to get our kids outside. And so we created that program and it's continued to today. And then we have our seasonal and summer farm camps. We'll have like 800-900 kids over the summer at the farm. And for those programs, they're there for a whole week or okay. Some families sign up.
Put them to work.
Yeah. I call it farmers in training. It says that on the back of their shirt.
Got any success stories where actually we've turned out some farmers or what?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I must say, you know, the kids coming through the program, we've had kids that have come through as campers in elementary school and then middle school. They're coming as counselors in training. And then in high school age, they've actually come as paid employees, as camp counselors, as a job.
Nice.
And on that note, you know, we have a pretty robust internship program and we've had countless interns come through that that have now farm employees.
Nice. Nice. Love that. Well, I mean, private school, title, whatever. It's like most city kids, like what is this farming thing all about, right? Some of the food just shows up somewhere, you know, and where does it magically come from, right? So actually you go up and touch the dirt and see what that looks like, I think is amazing.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, we find that not just the kids, but, you know, adults come to the farm and a lot of people don't know where their food comes from.
They, right, don't, exactly.
they don't know what it looks like coming out of the ground. You know, we've even had chefs and some culinary partners come out because, you know, maybe even the people that are working there along with them in the kitchens have never experienced a harvest, right? And what makes the highest quality food the best. And, you know, and going back to that again, you know, the nutrient density of the food is so important. Food travels so far, hundreds of sometimes thousands of miles before it comes to us. So a lot of times it's not at its actual ripeness and peak nutrient density. So it might have a much smaller percentage of its nutrients than one might be thinking when you're consuming it, right? And so part of what we're doing is providing people the most nutrient dense produce possible. We're also encouraging community to grow their own food. And I think that's extremely powerful. The notion of, you know, you can give the person a fish, but then teaching them how to fish. So, you know, a lot of schools have school gardens, and a lot of the community members or other horticulture programs that are coming to visit the farm, it's become an inspiration that's really been incentive to get other people to grow. And that's actually a whole other tangent to some of the work that we've been doing, supporting some grassroots growing in the community and supporting those efforts. And we've received grants and support in the community, and also a most recent grant through the San Diego Foundation to actually support just that. Some of the work that we're doing around grassroots growing, working specifically with tribal indigenous communities, refugee immigrant communities, to support their needs in growing food in their own spaces. So yeah, that's some new frontier for us right there.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I live in PB, and just down the street, one of the local churches had some land, right? And actually turned it into like a public garden, and people are like, I don't know exactly if they come and pay a price to have it for the year or whatever, but yeah, it's kind of cool to see an actual little farming going on right there down the street, you know? So.
Well, that's what happened during COVID, right? Like everybody started to get into homesteading, and you know, they were baking bread and starting up gardens and wanting to raise chickens. And it was a big reflection point, I think, for a lot of people, how we live, how we choose to live, how we care about each other. And I think we even saw certain things happen in the planet, right? We saw whales coming back into places.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of amazing how quickly things started turning around when we shut everything off just for a moment. Mm-hmm. The sky started to clear. All kinds of good things started happening. So, yeah, amazing. So maybe you can even educate us a little bit. You were kind of talking about, you know, we got food coming from 1,000 miles away and nutrition's not there. I know our soil, you know, has been farmed and fertilized and all kinds of good stuff. And so, I mean, the kinds of food that we eat today versus maybe 50 years ago, I mean, it's not even close, right, in regards to the nutrients.
Correct. So, yeah, I mean, coming off of World War II, a lot of chemicals that found their way into our farming practices, increasing crop production and whatnot, there's definitely been a dependence on fertilizers and pesticides, which have caused a lot of damage to the soil. Obviously, it's not just going to the soil, it's going to the food, it's going into us. We're currently losing topsoil around the world at an alarming rate. Topsoil is that, you know, rich nutrient microbial world that needs to be built up with a lot of inputs and care. And when you're doing heavy tilling of the soil and drying it out, when you're using these harmful fertilizers and pesticides, when you're not planting cover crop, when you're not pasturing animals and these kind of regenerative practices. So a lot of people say, well, what is regenerative agriculture? How can we build up the topsoil? You know, it is, again, using more regenerative. When I say regenerative, it really means kind of going back to the way things used to be done. So it's
they rotated the crops and did all these kinds of things.
Yeah, it's like not using the harmful fertilizers and pesticides. Pasturing animals, that natural fertility. We pasture chickens, so they're helping to eat the eggs or fertilizing the soil. Cover crops, which are going to keep, pull nutrients and nitrogen into the soil. And then no-till. You know, these are some of the basic principles that can help build up that soil really quickly. And you do see some larger farms actually starting to shift from their traditional farming to these practices, and they're seeing the benefits and the quality of what they're growing, the prices that they can get for that because it's a higher quality. But it is something important. The last thing I'll say is, you know, agriculture is one of the biggest contributors to global warming, which some people, but it's based on how you're doing agriculture, right? And so these more modern mechanized processes that I was mentioning can have a real negative impact on the climate and that temperature, whereas the other methods I was mentioning can actually help cool and balance the earth. So
every time we jump in and start mass producing things, right? Things kind of always have a way to go a little sideways on us here, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, every crop pulls different nutrients out of the soil as well as also puts different things into the soil. And so it's all a give and take. It's all a balance.
So what's the E3 Collaborative? I saw that. What's that all about? Because that's kind of a community that's happening where you guys are at?
Yeah, thank you for asking that. The E3 Collaborative, we're situated right there in what was formerly Ecky Ranch. And that property and that surrounding area, you know, like much of North County and that coastal North County, it was agriculture. And, you know, the Ecke Ranch, the Ecke family, they were there since the 1920s, over 900 acres.
What did they grow back in the day?
Poinsettia flowers. And, you know, that area of the county was known for flower growing. But there was other types of farms as well. And just as there was, were all over San Diego. But this collaborative, it's interesting because, you know, a lot of times people think there's other places, obviously, like Balboa Park and whatnot. But there's these smaller hubs, I think, around the county. And one of them is right there in Encinitas, where you have Coastal Roots Farm. You have the San Diego Botanic Garden. You have Farm Lab, which is part of the Encinitas School District. They have their own farm education program that's super amazing. You've got the Ecke YMCA. You have a number of different organizations that are, you know, living in community, and it's become kind of a hub. So we work together collaboratively to enhance and uplift, you know, whether it's looking at traffic calming or collaborating on programs. But it's a really special space and probably one of the few spaces kind of like that in the United States.
Wow, that's cool. So what is the origin story? So it started 2015. How did you guys come to be?
Yeah, so again, I just mentioned it was Ecke Ranch that was over 900 acres there in Encinitas. 2012, the Leach Tag Foundation purchased the land. And part of that vision in terms of, you know, they being very philanthropic, supporting a lot of social services and uplifting the community and basic needs, as well as uplifting vibrant Jewish life. And so here was an opportunity to, you know, acquire this last property, which was, you know, 67 and a half acres. We're on about 18 of those acres. And we've been able to kind of fulfill both of those parts of that intention, right? Like we're helping to nourish community and feed people and education and providing these services, as well as uplifting, you know, this vibrant Jewish life for people in all backgrounds as well that want to come and experience the farm. And 2014, it started out as a program in the foundation. 2015, it became an independent nonprofit. And here we are 10 years later. I've been there close to seven of those years. And it's just been a really great adventure to help it grow. We've got an amazing team. The community has been wonderful in supporting and getting involved. You know, we all sorts
of... How big of a crew do you have out there?
Yeah, we're like around 40 people.
Okay.
You know, like 28.
That's a crowd.
Yeah, it is. But, you know, with all the work we do, I mean...
It takes a village.
Yeah. Well, and everything I just mentioned, you know, I didn't even talk about like bigger community ongoing programs that we do. You know, it is our 10-year anniversary, and actually, on May 18th, we have our 10-year anniversary celebration. So, you know, inviting people, if they're interested, go to the website, check out the event, and hope you can join us. Also, during the summer months, we have some of our signature events, which also are great to come out and enjoy the farm. Along that vein of the 10-year, which is going to be Taste of the Farm, but we have farm-to-table dinners. People can come out and enjoy the farm and the fresh seasonal produce of the summer.
You have some of those guest chefs in to help with that. Yeah.
Guest chefs, pescatarian meals. It's whatever's in season. It's about 60 people. That's also on our website. The other thing is we have our farm film and music series, which is super fun, which also ties into everything we're doing. And that sunset hour, it's live acoustic music and bring your own picnic and just come out on the grass by the barn and put up a big screen, and we show different documentary films about either land or ocean conservation. And that's a way to bring in the community. We have other nonprofits tabling. And again, it's just about bringing people together. So when we talk about nourishing community, which we kicked off with, there's just so many ways that we do that. And then we get to do it on that land, which is really special.
So you guys are going at this 7 days a week, right? I mean, this is, sounds pretty nonstop, Bobby.
Well, I would say, you know, then there's Shabbat, right? So we are, you know, a Jewish organization. So one must rest.
So back to the old school way. Yeah.
Right. So our farmers actually work Sunday through Thursday. They don't work Friday and Saturday. And, you know, Kodesh is also one of our values, which revolves around sacred time. So we actually counter to what are probably some of the busier times for events and activities, but we're actually not open on Saturday, you know, and that's Shabbat. And so Kodesh and sacred time. And so also our big festivities around the year as well, and are a lot of those that are tied to agricultural celebrations and whatnot. Those also are timed based on, you know, Judaism's on a lunar calendar. So those, you know, when Sukkot happens, when Tu B'Shvat happens, when Shavuot happens, when Pesach happens, you know, all these things are happening based on that lunar calendar, which is interesting because we also farm on a lunar calendar as well. Like when we plant, when we harvest, there's also other agricultural principles, you know, in terms of rest. We talk about the seventh day of rest within Jewish tradition, going back to ancient times, is the notion of Shemitah, which means every 7 years, seven being a really important number, you actually let the land rest. And that actually ties directly to the notion of what I'd say really kind of sustainable farming. Like our bodies need to rest, the land needs to rest, you know? And I think going back to COVID, we even talked about there was like a forced pause. Mm-hmm. I think as a society, we don't know how to slow down. We're going so fast.
Right, right.
And so all of a sudden it was like, no, need to pause. Something's happened, you know? And so there's also Orla, which is, you know, in the first 3 years of a new vine or tree, you actually don't harvest. And, you know, it has its tradition and also has its horticultural value too, because you're letting that tree or that vine mature to the point where it's actually ready to fruit and harvest.
Old traditions, then the science catches up and says, oh yeah, that's actually a good thing to do, right? Yeah. It's interesting.
Yeah, so it's good.
Who are you? How did you get to this spot? Because you're not Jewish either, right?
No, I'm, you know, I've been working in San Diego for about 25 years in nonprofits. My undergraduate and graduate degrees in cultural anthropology. Thought I was going to be working in international health in Latin America. I actually interned when I was at the University of San Diego at the Museum of Man, Museum of Us now. And that kind of pulled me back to San Diego, also family. And got married, kids, you know, stayed. Here I am, 25 in. But I think the different organizations I've been with, which in 25 years has just been four organizations, have all revolved around kind of experiential education. Again, this background in health development and spending a lot of time in, originally born in Mexico and spent a lot of time in Mexico. And, you know, after college, Mexico, Central South America and rural and indigenous communities and farming communities. You know, it's kind of like ties it all in when I come to Coastal Roots Farm. I mean, it's really, it's, you know, the cultural component, which I find, you know, fascinating. And again, I'm not Jewish, but that kind of Judeo-Christian kind of mindset background and understanding cultures and traditions and how important it is and how interconnected culture and tradition is to food and agriculture and to the land, regardless of where in the world. It's something that actually is a shared experience, I would say.
But companies are always trying to find a culture that works, right?
Yeah.
We're trying to get people coming in and lining it up and saying, hey, here's how we operate, right? This is our culture here. So yeah. Having a foundation of a good, solid culture that's based on traditions and good practices is a great thing.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's, there's something foundational about the farm that people can relate to, again, regardless of where they're coming and their background. I mean, yeah, there's people that come in and they're, you know, there's a lot of nostalgia too, which is always interesting when people come to the farm. They're like, oh, you know, I actually grew up on a farm, or my grandparents grew up on a farm. And if you look back at kind of the...
My mom grew up on a farm.
Yeah, no, but seriously, it's like you look at that, you know, a lot of how the United States operated, if you only go like two generations back, or if you go three or four,
it was closer farming, yeah.
It was foundational. And then you talk about, you know, I meet people all the time with their families coming from, you know, all different countries from around the world. And again, it's something that kind of unites us and gets back to those foundational principles around how we care about each other, which I started off with, that notion of arivu, like mutual care. How do we care about each other? Adam va'adama, like how are we as people connected and interconnected to the land? And how are we caring for the land? Because the land needs to care for us. And so it's like, if we're not taking care of the land, then you know what? We've got a problem. And of course, you know, that goes without saying of what we see happening around the world today.
So I've been involved in studying some Hinduism here in the last year and a half. And one of the things I find interesting is this idea that being a mother to the world, which is the idea that everything's coming up from the earth. I mean, this building came from the earth, right? And it's all going to go back at some point in time. Mm-hmm. So just having this mindset and appreciating everything that we're all from the same thing. You know, we are what we eat. If we stop eating, we would both just disappear, right? So when you really kind of get your head around that, it really makes a big difference, I think.
Yeah. I mean, we've been partnering with the Indigenous-led organization called Red Earth Movement. And the leader there, he's amazing, amazing guy. And, you know, one of their kind of principles, we talk about nourishing community. He says, heal the earth, heal the people, right? So heal the earth, heal the people. And so it's almost like in giving, we receive too, right? And so, you know, it's very, very important, whether you're talking about plastics in the ocean, deforestation, you know, taking away important lands that are critical to the survival of our natural environment. You know, it's a critical time that we're living in for sure, especially if we want to leave it for the generations to come.
So I'm having this whole new experience, Javier. So I'm working with my wife's nonprofit in PB. I'm working in the social enterprise, which is a community care crew. So we clean up the streets of PB. We got a contract with the business district. So I'm out this morning. I was out picking up gum, cigarette butts, unbelievable, right? The bottles, the cans, the plastic. I mean, it's kind of amazing. I'm like going, who thinks it's a good idea just throw your gum on the ground, right? I mean, who are these people? That's what kind of just frustrates me walking down the street thinking, come on, didn't your mom teach you anything? Yeah. It's nuts. So you and I have a common passion. I kind of stopped doing it some years ago, but sailboat racing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. My whole life I've been a sailboat racer, so yeah.
Yeah, no, it's definitely would call myself a waterman and grew up in and around the ocean. Started sailing when I was a young kid. My mom's family is actually from Buzzards Bay.
Oh, okay.
You know, my dad's family is from Mexico and my mother's family from New England. And yeah, we've been in the water at a young age. And actually when I went to University of San Diego, my job actually through college was working at the Mission Bay Aquatic Center, which is super fun, teaching sailing, mostly kayaking, some surfing. And then actually when I moved back to San Diego, when I took that job at the museum, you know, I decided that was my moment to live on a boat. So I actually,
all right, I've been there, done that.
Yeah. And I got married, sold the boat.
Exactly.
35 foot Ericsson tall rig. And nice. Yeah, just
at a Catalina 38.
Nice.
One of the old Con Cup boats. Yeah.
Yeah. No, like being on the water, in the water, anything around the water.
Yeah. I mean, I partly lived on it because I couldn't afford to actually have an apartment and the boat at the same time. Sailboat racing is expensive, right?
Yeah. No, that's good stuff.
I kind of aged out though. I remember racing and going, you know, racing with guys who got a little old, got a little slow. And I'm like, at some point, I think I'm a little too old for this. So I gave that up to go do more car racing kinds of stuff. So now I can just sit on my butt and drive.
That's awesome.
But yeah, many, many years of doing that. So what's keeping you up at night over there? I mean, you're running a big operation. What are you excited about? What are you worried about?
Well, I think for, you know, any organization right now, I mean, I think there's, you know, there's always the uncertainty. Being an organization as young as Coastal Roots Farm, you're always thinking about kind of the sustainability, the business model. I always think about it as a mission and margin. You know, people say like return on investment, or I say return on investment, return on impact, two ways to think about ROI. So just finding that kind of balance, you know, and especially it's always more challenging when something's newer, and especially something like this, like an educational nonprofit farm, right? That's doing all the things that we do. It's pretty special and it's unique. I mean, there's nothing like it on the scale that we're doing, you know, here in San Diego, that's for sure. And I would say in a much farther region and even looking around the country. So if you're talking about feeding as many people as we're feeding, growing the way we're growing, educating the number of people we're educating and providing this kind of enriched, you know, kind of Jewish life experience and welcoming people of all backgrounds, that's a lot. You know, that's a lot. And so, you know,
a lot of balls in the air.
Okay. Yeah. And just, you know, like we've been really good about, I think, increasing our earned revenue over the last number of years, which is super important, I think, for any organization to think about your social enterprise. You know, what are the ways you're earning revenue and then diversifying your contributed revenue, individual corporate foundation. We don't necessarily operate with a lot of government support like some of the larger health and human service agencies. As we know, they're going through a lot of challenges right now and the uncertainty there. But I would say, you know, I mean, it's both a puzzle. I mean, it's a challenge and it's an opportunity. you know, in the last organization I was with, I've been in the farm close to 7 years. Last organization was the Children's Discovery Museum in Escondido, and helped to grow that organization over 8 years. And that taught me a lot in terms of, you know, taking a small concept of an organization and like making it, I would say, more of an institution, and, you know, building up its fundraising, building up its mission and impact. And maybe I feel like I'm a little bit social entrepreneur and mindset, you know, that kind of startup mode and growing it, that gets me excited, I would say.
Nice. Time to wrap it up. I always like to end with, what's the big idea? What do you want people to remember? After this whole conversation, if there's like one thing you want people to remember, what would that be, Javier?
You know, less about making it about the Coastal Roots Farm per se, but I think, you know, going maybe back to this notion community, I think the big idea is that every one of us is capable, like we all need to be nourished ourselves, like there's self-care, caring for our own family, the media, but there's definitely a way that everyone can nourish community, right? And there's everyone can give back in some way. I mean, you were talking about going and picking up trash in PB this morning, yeah, right?
Me and my homeless crew.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, that's nourishing community. And just to think about that, to think about, you know, and that also I would say in terms of nourishing community, going back to that notion of, I mentioned Arevu and Adamva Adama, mutual care, how we care about each other. And when we say nourishing community, but also how we're caring for the environment and how the environment's caring for us. And we're inextricably linked to the environment, and it's not a choice. We are one, as some, you know, would say, spaceship Earth, right? Like, right. Yeah, this is like, this is it. This is the only one we got, and we got to take care of it. And we got to take care of each other.
Love it. We start out with nourishing community, and we're ending with nourishing community. That's how you know you got a good purpose, is when that always seems to be the core thought. So appreciate that. 10-year reunion coming up. Fantastic. Man, you're doing some amazing work. I didn't realize all the things you got going there. So people need to come check you guys out.
Yep. That'd be great.
Well, thank you very much for coming in. Really appreciate it. So that's our show for today. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, where we're all counting on you.